As you may recall, last October, we were saddened when the actor Matthew Perry, who was an actor on the series Friends, was found dead in his hot tub, and he had died of an overdose of ketamine, and I believe he had some other things in his system, too. This week, the U.S. Attorney's Office in L.A. announced that five individuals have been charged in connection with his death. And with us to break down the story is California attorney. She's a defense attorney, Rachel Fizay. She's a co-founder and managing partner of her own firm, ZFZ. And she her practice includes representing healthcare fraud, political corruption, a variety of other criminal acts. She is a frequent television and radio legal analyst and has been named one of Daily Journal's top white-collar lawyers and top women's lawyers. And her Midwest connection is that she was a nationally ranked junior tennis player and competed on the Purdue University women's tennis team. Is that really true?
It is true.
You just went from one court to another.
Able to do any of that?
right. We are doing more practicing than we are doing swinging. So let's talk a little bit about the drug ketamine. This is something that I think is a newer drug that we are not as familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about this drug?
Well, ketamine is not per se illegal. It is approved for use in anesthesia and pain relief, and there are uses for it for off-label depression, and so there are medical uses for this drug when it is prescribed correctly and when it is supervised.
So can you tell us who these defendants are? There are five of them who have been charged by the federal prosecutors in L.A. Can you tell us who they are and how they played into this Matthew Perry scenario?
So there are two doctors charged, and the two doctors worked together basically to get Matthew Perry the ketamine that he wanted, and they were not prescribing it legally. So the two doctors were not properly administering or prescribing the drug to Matthew Perry. So while they could have, and one ran a ketamine clinic, this was not medically used. This was not properly prescribed to him. And then the other three people are not medical providers. One is Jasveen Sangha, and she is known as ketamine, the ketamine queen of North Hollywood. And she's, you know, for lack of a better term, basically a drug dealer. And it looks like her contact was through Matthew Perry was a man named Eric Fleming, who is also charged, and he was more of the go-between between Sangha and Fleming and Matthew Perry. So that was that line. And then the final person charged was Matthew Perry's personal assistant, Kenneth Iwamasa, and he did the injections for Matthew Perry and was essentially instrumental in getting the drugs to Perry.
You know, we have seen this kind of thing with celebrities, and I was kind of Googling through, you know, Elvis Presley. There was someone charged, the doctor was charged there. Michael Jackson, of course, we remember that. Anna Nicole Smith, I'm not sure if someone was actually charged, but they were looking into it. Even Heath Ledger and Brittany Murphy, there was talk about indicting some of the medical professionals there. Do you think, Rachel, that because a person is a celebrity, they are more able to get doctors and other people to give them the drugs, or is it because they have more money and they are able to pay the amount of money to get these illicit drugs, or a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, they have the resources to get the drugs. One doctor said to the other doctor, "I wonder how much this moron will pay."
Oh.
So these doctors both don't have any record of doing this kind of thing, or disciplinary records, but I think the money was too enticing to not supply Perry with the drugs when they were confronted with that opportunity. And the other thing about celebrities is they have people that are really kind of working around the clock to get them whatever they want. And that leads to actually having more witnesses when something like this happens, which can then allow charges and an investigation to happen more easily. So it's a little bit of a domino effect. It starts with money, but ends with multiple witnesses that allow for the FBI to do the investigation.
Well, and I suppose the spotlight is on a case that has to do with somebody who is a high-profile decedent, right? I mean, you know, if it was just Joe Blow, maybe there would be nothing going on with this, but this is something that, you know, attracted international attention, and the government, you know, could have said, hey, we're going to use this as an example, and let's investigate it to find out what happened here.
I completely agree. It's so high profile. It's in the public interest. And when something like this comes, a death like this comes out, and the public is so interested, they're also looking for answers, and they're looking for law enforcement for answers. Like, how could this be happening? Why is this amount of ketamine in his system? How did it get there? Was it prescribed? And why is it on the streets?
And to your knowledge, Rachel, why was he taking these drugs? I mean, he admitted very publicly that he had problems with alcohol and opioids. But was there something that it stemmed from his original addiction? Or what is our knowledge about why he was seeking out ketamine?
Well, he was using it legally as part of a medication for his depression. So part of what Matthew Perry was doing was using legal ketamine in a medical setting. And I think what happened from there is he wanted more and more and more, and the doctor wasn't prescribing more and more and more. So he went to seek out the feeling that he was getting from the ketamine through illegal means. And he got the initial taste of ketamine legally, and then it looks like it spiraled from there.
We're talking to Rachel Fazay. She is an attorney in California, and she's a criminal defense attorney and co-founder and managing partner of ZFZ, which is easier to say than the names. but we appreciate you joining us. Before we take a break, I wanted to ask you, what is your knowledge of these five defendants who have been charged in the death of Matthew Perry? Have they been tied to other abuses with other patients and other third parties, or is Matthew Perry the only victim in this ring of drug administration?
So the one that looks tied, there's only one, and that is Jasveen Singha, and she is tied to a death in 2019, and that is instrumental in her charges as well. She's not been charged with that death yet, but she is tied to a 2019 death of a personal trainer who received the ketamine from her as well.
So this is going to be problematic. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the details of the charges and what this might mean in the future. Again, we're talking to Rachel Fazay about the charges brought in the matter of Matthew Perry's death. Where you're listening to WGN.
Matthew Perry sought treatment for depression and anxiety and went to a local clinic where he became addicted to intravenous ketamine. When clinic doctors refused to increase his dosage, he turned to unscrupulous doctors who saw Perry as a way to make quick money. Without performing any medical evaluation or monitoring, they supplied Matthew Perry with large amounts of ketamine in exchange for large sums of money, charging Perry $2,000 for a vial that cost Dr. Chavez approximately $12.
Well, that kind of says it all, that they're gouging him. And I'm here with Rachel Fazay, who is an attorney out in California, who's been following this case closely. That's just really awful. That shows the desperation of Matthew Perry to get this drug, and it shows the unscrupulous nature of the people who were supplying it to him. So what are the actual charges, Rachel? What are the charges, and what do they mean for these defendants?
So there are 18 separate charges among the five defendants, and not all of them are charged with exactly the same amount of charges. Most of the charges relate to various counts of conspiracy to distribute ketamine, distributing ketamine, and other types of counts, like having drugs on premises. So Sangha has several counts that relate to basically her possession of drugs and other drugs on her own premises, whereas the doctors are more involved in the conspiracy and in falsifying documents, which is one of the charges Dr. Plasencia is facing, is that he has two counts of falsifying medical records with the intent to interfere with the government investigation. So those are a big deal as well. So once he knew he was under investigation, he started writing it out as if Matthew Perry was a real patient of his, and he was caught doing that. So that's generally the range of the charges.
It's interesting because I'm sure this was a thorough investigation. It sounds like it. I think you've commented in the past. I've heard you, Rachel, saying that this looks to be a very thorough, very serious investigation that was done. But it just seems to me, I just wonder if there are other, were they sloppy with other people, or was this guy just so desperate and so wealthy and that he was the one that they did this to? You know, the idea that they were then following the rules with other people. I'm just wondering if any of that is possible. I don't know if you know that or can comment on it.
It's difficult to say. I think Sangha is the biggest fish of the people that were charged. And if I had to guess, they started with Matthew Perry's assistant who administered the drugs on the day he died. And he probably pled fairly soon and began cooperating. And from there, they got to the doctors, they got to Eric Fleming, and from Eric Fleming, they then got to Sangha. And I think there will likely be more investigation to come, possibly more charges to come, because where is she getting her drugs from?
Exactly.
So this is a bit like an onion where you unpeel each layer and then you find basically a bigger fish up the chain. And that's what it looks like this investigation has done. And so if she were to plead guilty at some point to reduce her possible sentence, she will likely have to cooperate in doing so. And then she gives up more people as to where she's, you know, basically her suppliers, and she appears to be dealing multiple types of drugs.
So you alluded to the idea that someone has pled. How many defendants here have pled guilty, to your knowledge?
Two have pled guilty, and one is charged on an information with the intent that he will plead guilty on August 30th. So they have three people that have pled, and those are that's one doctor there, that's his assistant, and then there's that intermediary between basically the drug dealer, Ketamine Queen, and Matthew Perry's assistant. So those three have pled, and that's where that information that got the other two that were arrested on Friday, that's likely where most of that information came from, through that investigation and that plea.
And of course, as we all know from watching these types of cases, that there will be testimony by the people who plead guilty in exchange for, hopefully for them, a lighter sentence. And I assume all the people who are licensed doctors will lose their licenses, probably for good, given the high profile nature of this case. Agreed?
I agree. Yes, this is these are serious felony charges that directly relate to the job of a doctor, and those are hard to overcome in getting your license back.
And as far as sentencing goes, I know there's a variety of charges here that have a variety of spans of different federal sentencing guidelines and all of that. But what are you thinking about for the Queen of Ketamine? What is the potential worst case scenario for somebody like her?
So she's, again, the biggest fish, and her worst case scenario is life in prison. So she has the most charges that have carry the heaviest weight. And the other thing that's very interesting about her is that she was not released on bail. She is still in custody, whereas the other doctor that was charged this week, he has been released on bail, but she has not. So they are viewing her as a very serious criminal and a flight risk.
Really, really interesting. And, you know, we touched upon this before, but obviously Matthew Perry was a famous actor. He was beloved. He was an acknowledged addict. And I think, you know, the world really just kind of felt very sad when this happened. You know, a lot of people will say, well, these they're coming, the government's coming down on these people because it's a high profile nature. If it was just Joe Blow, it wouldn't matter. Is it fair, do you think, for a prosecution team to come down heavier and to spend more resources to prosecute a high-profile case with the idea that it is in the news and people will take note of what's going on?
Is it fair is probably no. I'm sure it is not fair, particularly if you are the family of a victim who is not high-profile but dies in the exact same way. So, no, it is not fair. But the prosecutors tend to use their resources where they can levy the most weight. And here they're the making an example of these defendants is sending a message to other people similarly situated that might be illegally prescribing and illegally selling and distributing ketamine. And that's really the intent, is to get the message out that we are taking these crimes seriously at the U.S. Attorney's Office. I mean, fairness is, again, it is not fair, particularly if you are a victim's family in a different instance. But as to getting the drugs off the street, that's the ultimate goal for everybody. And using their resources in a high-profile case is more likely to help do that and set a precedent and make people aware of that precedent.
And that's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing. I mean, if this prosecution, you know, wakes people up, people who might be doing some kind of aspect of this kind of horrific conduct, you know, and it saves one person's life, it, you know, that's a good thing, that setting a precedent. And, you know, we in Chicago have a lot of political corruption. I know you do some of that defense work. And we keep hoping that when there is a prosecution and the person goes to prison, that we won't see that corruption again. But for some reason in our world here in Chicago, it just keeps happening. And you know, there have been books and sociologists opine about why it does and why politicians keep doing it. But that's a story for another day, I guess. You know, as a criminal defense lawyer, Rachel, if you were tasked with representing one of these defendants, what would be your strategy here? How do you approach defending somebody who was involved in this high profile case that people are just angry and people are, you know, really, I mean, these defendants are getting a lot of bad press, put it that way.
I think the doctor's defense will look different than the defense of the ketamine queen for, you know, because she is a street dealer. So she likely has really no defense in the realm of I should have been in possession of these drugs. So that's a harder sell. From the doctor's viewpoint, I would imagine if this went to trial, it would look like something murky, or at least an attempt to make it murky as to whether these were prescribed and given and sold as part of some sort of medical treatment, even if it was not completely recorded and prescribed in the way that it should. So the doctor's defense will look something like a medical treatment as it relates to Perry's depression and anxiety and treatment in that way. But it would be pretty hard in both of those instances if they face an uphill battle in convincing a jury that they would be prescribed properly here.
Is there any part of this, which I'm thinking the answer is going to be no, but is there any part of this that the defense is that, well, he was an addict and he was asking for it and he was exaggerating his symptoms and therefore we were fooled by Matthew Perry and that's why we gave him all these drugs? And as I say that, as it comes out of my mouth, it doesn't even ring like it. That doesn't pass the sniff test, right?
It's difficult because that's just simply not a defense. Like,
no.
He wanted illegal drugs and I gave them to him is not a defense. So it speaks to emotional and maybe even like I'm trying to help somebody, but it's not a defense. So there's either a medical reason, because ketamine is a controlled substance, there are clear guidelines on what has to be done in order for it to leave a doctor's office or a pharmacy. And it's going to be very hard for them to meet those parameters.
And so what's next in the process, Rachel?
So the next is the plea entered by the third person, and I think the investigation continues. I would not be surprised if we saw more plea negotiations out of the two remaining defendants. I think, again, the woman in custody has a extreme uphill battle to get off of a life sentence or something pretty major, given her history with a separate death. But I think that both of these parties might plea for in exchange for other information and other charges that can be levied against other people that maybe weren't involved in Matthew Perry's death, but in other people's distribution of ketamine and perhaps other deaths. So there's more to come.
There is more to come. And you told me off of microphone that Garagos is going to be one of the lawyers for one of the defendants, who, of course, represented Michael Jackson and represented Scott Peterson. But that's for another day, because I'm going to have you back on to talk about the Scott Peterson case, which is heating up a little bit with some DNA evidence. But we've run out of time. Rachel Fizay, thank you so much for joining us. If people want to get in touch with you quickly, how do they get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram at Law and Rachel, and on my website at zfz.com.
And it'll be on WGN website, Rachel Fizay, F-I-S-E-T. Thank you so much.